Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, America, and all fellow real estate investors, and welcome to the 2016 edition of the Real Estate Investors Mastermind Radio Show. I'm your host, Peter Gardini. Been doing this for a lot of years, more than I ever thought I would be. Little news for you, I'm back. Turns out that I've actually had a lot of people approach me saying that they would like to see and hear, well, not see, I'm on the radio, but they would like to hear me start up the radio show again. It's a way for them to stay involved, catch the insights that I provide. I get invigorated by the stories that I'm telling about how some of my clients are prospering or not, or challenged, being challenged and succeeding through those challenges. So anyway, I went back into the history on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm about 3 years and 10 months since the last show. I think the last show was on July 28th of 2012. Why did I stop? I don't know. It just got old. I felt like I was repeating myself. Any number of reasons, and now maybe I need to see if I can't reinvigorate myself a little bit. So what's going on with me? Same old in many regards. Still coaching and helping real estate investors to be successful. I've actually had some pretty huge successes in the past couple years. Don't want to brag, but when you have clients that make over six figures on a deal, that's a pretty big accomplishment. And so proud of them for having made that accomplishment. It doesn't mean that we aren't without our struggles, that we don't, that we're not challenged with the marketplace that we're dealing with. It just means that every now and then you get a grand slam, and what we hope for every time is at least a home run. Okay, so what are we going to talk about on this first renew of the Real Estate Investors Mastermind? You know, I could go into how well my clients are doing or the challenges that they're having, and I've got one particular story I'm going to get into toward the end. But what I'm going to deal with first is the, I'll say, 30,000-foot view of the world as we know it. What is coming with the real estate market? I think I'll start that question out with another question. The question is, who the hell is Sam Zell? For those of you who pay attention to the elephants and that stomp around in the commercial real estate world, you'll know that Sam Zell, I believe he's out of Chicago, not only owns the Chicago Tribune and the Baltimore Sun, yeah, that may put him in a certain non-positive light with others and may make him look like a savior to the others yet. The bottom line is he owns a lot of different stuff. Mostly, he made his wealth in real estate, big real estate, the commercial stuff, a lot of apartment buildings, a lot of residential, big residential stuff. So he's no slouch. Obviously, he's a multi-billionaire. He can, make his own markets, make things happen at his whim. He's also pretty smart. Billionaires also that way because they're dumb. They know they have to hire the right people. They have to turn those people loose. And Sam Zell does that with quite success, I might add. So why is he important to the discussion today? Well, it seems that Sam Zell has a penchant for being able to see what's happening in the future. He did this very successfully in 2007. Now, if you were involved in real estate or you were involved in the anywhere in the mortgage or real estate market in 06, you know that things were really, really challenged. You also know that in that time frame in the commercial world that the value of properties was going through the freaking roof. For those of you who will pay attention to this particular income-producing avenue in real estate, you know that one of the defining factors of the value of a property is called a capitalization rate. I'm not going to go into educating you on what a capitalization rate is right now, but essentially, when the cap rate is really high, it means you're getting a killer deal. When the cap rate is really low, it means you're paying full retail or beyond. And in this case, in 2006 and 2007, the cap rates across the country for commercial residential real estate were literally down around 4%. Essentially what that meant is that somebody was willing to get a 4% return year on their first year of investment if they paid all cash for that investment. So they put $100 million in, they're happy with getting $4 million out, 4%. Now, in today's market, 4% actually looks pretty good vis-a-vis the interest rates that are, you can get through whatever vehicle you put in play. But back then, 4%, even then, 4% was a bit low. And yet, real estate was being driven. The demand was so high, people were paying such high prices for real estate that it was driving the cap rate down, and meaning people were willing to pay more and more and more and get less and less and less on their return. And so they were buying commercial stuff like crazy. It was not unusual back then to go out and buy a residential apartment building or a whole group of them, like Sam Zell sold in 07, for $100,000 to $120,000 a door. Think about that. $100,000 to $120,000 a door. You know how much rent you have to bring in just to get a few measly bucks off a $100,000 door? You have to have some pretty high rents. And you also have to have a pretty lean organization relative to the expenses associated with those rents and managing the properties and keeping them upkept. So anyway, Sam Zell comes along in 07 and says, things aren't feeling very correct to me. The market is overpriced. I'm getting out. So like the genius that he is, he bought low and he sells high. So he unloads just about everything in 07. And sure enough, in 08, things really, really got bad. We know what happened there. You know, the Great Recession, we're still not climbing out of it with valor. We're just barely limping along. An 8% GDP in the first quarter of 2016 is not a success story. I don't care what anyone tells you. So anyway, Sam Zell got rid of everything in 07. Then he's now got a lot of cash. What do you think he does? He just bides his time. And as the dust starts to settle in 2010 and 2011, Mr. Zell starts buying again. The epitome, buy low, sell high. Well, as he starts getting back into the game, deploying his cash into the real estate market, Mr. Zell is saying, I got good deals. I'm going to manage them using the formula that he has successfully used. I don't know what it is, but he obviously knows what he's doing. And he gets back in the game, and now he's watching as the market is starting to boil. And we know from what we've been told, and of course, if you're in the game, you know this. You know that in almost every major market in this country, if you've got a property that you're trying to sell that you have bought and renovated, you are going to sell it quickly, and you are going to sell it at a premium, multiple offers even. You also know that if you have a rental and it's, you know, it probably doesn't even have to be in sterling condition. Certainly if you're doing small multi-units or single-family homes, it's going to be in good shape. It's going to be safe. It's going to be secure, and you're going to get top rents. And you know what? The rents, especially in the major metropolitan areas, have been going up phenomenally. Until, of course, they haven't been. So what I mean by that is things are kind of, they're not stagnating, but the top is off the rent. The top is not off the retail market yet, but we aren't far. So Mr. Zell, he sees what's coming, being the smart guy that he is. What do you think he's doing at this point in time? He's getting ready to unload his commercial portfolio. How do you think a guy like that manages? This is pure genius. He doesn't get emotionally involved with anything that he's doing. It's all about, I'm going to buy this building. I'm going to use my cash and more than likely a lot of somebody else's cash. I'm going to upside manage it, and we are then going to sell it when we have to. That's his exit strategy. The key is that he's watching the market. to determine when the best time is to sell. And I'll tell you from experience, the best time to sell is somewhere around 12 o'clock on the appreciation clock. I know this because I unloaded everything in 2006 at about 12:02, 12:05 on the appreciation clock. Made a killing doing it. I'd love to say that I did it because I was a genius, but that wasn't the real reason. The real reason is the partnership was dissolving. But still, I looked like a genius, I felt like a genius, and we were laughing all the way to the bank because people were paying too much at that time for the products we were offering. I was more than happy to sell it to them. You know, not my fault that people aren't better educated on how income-producing properties actually function and the costs associated with them. So, non-emotional. Mr. Zell's not emotionally tied to anything that he's doing. He's in it because he's looking to make a profit. And if there are other entities that come along and believe that they are better than the market or better than Mr. Zell, Mr. Zell is more than happy to sell it to them and let them make the profits that they believe they can. And I can tell you right now that everything I'm reading, especially in the residential commercial world, that we're back up over $100,000 a door, probably up to $120,000 a door. To me, that's outrageous, okay? But why can people do that? One, the cost of money is next to non-existent. It's very easy to get big commercial loans and end up paying 3, 4, 5%. You couldn't do that in 07, that's for sure. Maybe you were at 6 or 7% tied to LIBOR or the Prime Plus or something like that. But the interest rates even back then were higher. Interest rates are lower now. In the commercial world, it's easier for the established players to be able to take down the financing necessary through multiple sources. For us little guys that are working into the commercial world, probably not as easy starting out till you get established. But I find myself going down a rabbit hole. So let's pull back a little bit. Sam Zell, he's reading the tea leaves. He's getting ready to unload his portfolio. A portfolio, remember, he just bought in the past, 6 years, 5 years, something like that. So there's a guy who epitomizes the notion that you don't get emotionally wed to anything you're doing. It's all about generating profit. Enough of Sam Zell. I'm reading an article. Where did that article come from? I think it's a Bloomberg. Yep, a Bloomberg article. You know, you've probably heard the adage, and if you've listened to me long enough and followed along, I will tell you that if you're looking at condos or townhomes, the first words out of my mouth are, condos are the first thing to collapse in a market, and townhouses are the second, followed then usually by a lengthy period, a delay of single family. When there's a recovery, condos are the last things to recover, and of course, single families are the first thing. So the headline, let's see if I can find the headline here. Miami's condo frenzy ends with inventory piling up in new towers. That's an interesting headline. It certainly caught my attention because, again, the condo world is the canary in the coal mine, the way I like to look at it. Now, granted, Miami has always had a vicious cycle of condo overbuilding, market saturation, and then not having enough buyers for whatever reason, or those buyers that came in on pre-construction prices now trying to unload them, because they're seeing some softness in the market, the condo market specifically. Well, it doesn't matter what the specific reasons are. Miami is overbuilt for condos. The buyers aren't buying them. As a matter of fact, this is an interesting statistic. At the current sales pace of available condos in the Miami area, it would take 29 months to sell the 3,397 condos just in the downtown area alone. That, to me, is staggering. Then when you look at that there's another 8,000 coming online through new construction or permits, and you say to yourself, that's a problem. Okay, I would hate to be in condos, especially if I needed to keep the value of the condo I owned at some certain point. Let's say you owned it as a rental and you have covenants in your loan that every 3 years you're going to refinance, and of course it needs to be appraised and meet loan to value ratio that is tied, of course, to the appraisal. If it's not to meet that covenant, then you're either coming to the table with money or they're coming after the property. So you got this canary in the coal mine, the condos. You know, this is Miami. Do we say this and apply it across the entire country? I'm going to say a prudent person is going to be like Sam Zell. He's going to start looking around, and she's going to say, my market seems to be a little soft on condos also. You know, a robust market, a good market, things are going to sell. The days on market are going to be anywhere from 4 to 8 months, all right? A six obviously being perfect. In the single-family home world right now, everything, not everything, but most things are certainly under 90 days in most major markets. Denver, huge. I mean, it's on the market. It oftentimes doesn't even get on the market. Listening to a radio spot this afternoon, Indianapolis, multiple offers, people even approaching homeowners, whether they want to sell or not, just to see if they will sell. That, to me, starts to define a feeding frenzy in the marketplace. But that will last for a while. Has it gone away in the condo world? I don't know. My guess is I'm going to go out, and without having done a whole bunch of research, and I will, but without having gone out and done a whole bunch of research, I suspect that the condo market is overheated, it's overpriced, there is too much inventory, and people aren't going to pay that price for a condo. Okay? They'll go to a townhome, or they'll go to a single family, or they just won't buy. So, let's look at the single-family market for a minute. Time and time again, I find myself saying to my clients and to anyone else that asks the question being, how do I get into real estate and can I find a deal? The first thing I say is, well, you got to jump in, obviously, get yourself educated. Secondly, finding a deal, you know, once you find a deal and once you have inventory in today's world, no problem whatsoever getting it renovated and sold into the retail market space. If you are brand new and trying to find a deal, challenge, then you got to be thinking like a guerrilla marketing expert where you're doing multiple things at one time. If you're just sitting on your butt looking at the MLS, I can tell you, you're not going to succeed. But that's probably another radio show. But for right now, if you've got inventory, you are in the power seat. Let me tell you, you are in the driver's seat. You control the whole scenario. If you don't have inventory, you better be out there in front of your competition to find these deals, because if you're just sitting on your butt trying to get them off the multiple listing service, you are not going to succeed. So if you've got inventory, if you're ruthless in your execution, and all my clients know what ruthless execution looks like. Several of them right now are struggling with ruthless execution because of contractors, because of weather, because of any number of reasons. You can look at those as excuses if you want, but the key between a reason and an excuse is an excuse you're just going to lament and be victimized by it. A reason is, hey, it's there, you acknowledge it, you take responsibility for it, you move on, you kill it, and you move on. All right, so where am I with this rambling scenario here? If you've got inventory, you are in the driver's seat. And if you get that inventory on the market and you price it right, you make it look good, you stage it properly, you put the right words in the description, you're going to get one or more buyers. You may even get a bidder's war. And what is not to be loved about a bidder's war? So, what does that tell me? The spot that I heard on Indianapolis today was something like 10% increase in appreciation over last year. Denver, past 4 or 5 years, has had 30, 40, 50%. In one or two cases that I know of, probably 100% appreciation. That is absolutely crazy wild. It's also a market that's probably overheated because things don't stay in the market very long. The asking prices are high. The buyers are willing to pay it. They're being appraised at those prices. So, again, if you have inventory, what's not to like? But what does that mean if you're rehabbing and selling into the homeowner's marketplace? It means that you better get into the deal, you better get it done, and you better get it sold because we are probably at about 11 o'clock. Maybe if you do it in minutes, we're probably at about 2 minutes before 12 on the top of the cycle. Now, that doesn't mean when the clock strikes 12 that you're out of luck. It just means that when it starts to go past 12, you may start to see the days on market languish a little more. You may see that you have to lower your price. You may certainly see you're not going to get multiple offers. You may only get one or two or three people a week instead of 10 or 12 or whatever the case may be. You'll start to look for these telltale signs. And you'll know then that maybe in your market is stepping past the high point and it may be on its way down. The challenge, of course, is you don't know how long it's going to last. The good news, and this is really good news, is interest rates, of course, have been low. They have been stupidly historically low. Remember, the interest rates are tied to the 10-year Treasury bond. I haven't looked at it, to be honest with you, but it has been under 2% on the 10-year bond, for the yield, for at least 2 months. I'll make sure I look at it for next week's show. Yes, I'm going to have a show next Sunday. I will try and make the time something earlier than 11. This is the only slot I could get when I scheduled it in. So we'll see how that all pans out. So what am I saying? Recap. You know, if you want to be like successful people, if you want to have their success, you always follow successful people. I think Sam Zell is probably telling the world something, that he derives his success from having an uncanny ability to be able to determine and predict what's happening within one of his primary markets, in this case, commercial real estate, residential real estate. The market is telling us, because of short days on market, multiple bids, high appreciation, etc., that the market is probably at its top. The market is telling us via condos that maybe condos are the canary in the coal mine, and now we have to start paying attention that if that market collapses, certainly one could argue that 29 months to get rid of existing inventory is a collapsed market in Miami. You know, the market is telling us that maybe things aren't as peachy as we thought they were. I don't know. I hate to be a prognosticator, but what I encourage you to do is become your own prognosticator. Go in and look, do some research. The information is there. If I can find it, and I'm just sitting on my butt cruising the internet, I know you can, particularly if you start putting in some specific search requests. So figure out what's going on in your market. You probably say, yeah, it's going great, nothing to worry about. I'll tell you, if you make that statement, then you need to recalibrate yourself as a business person. Because if you cavalierly say, yeah, my market is great and there's nothing to worry about, you're going to wake up one morning having been slapped upside the head and wondering why you're laying on the floor instead of being nice and comfy in your bed, just like that. How do I know? Because I've been caught in it. You know, the one time I got caught terribly was an $80,000 ordeal. Thank God we had the capital to cover going to closing and coughing up $80,000. Not a fun experience. You don't want to be in that spot either. So I really, well, let me start this over. I hate to have this show be about watch out what's coming up in the future, but it's also a great way to start the show because I'm challenging you to get out there and identify where you are on that clock. And I do believe that almost every market is pretty close to 12 o'clock on just about everything. Okay, so I'm going to do a shift here, and I'm going to talk a little bit about negotiating and wholesaling. So I've been advising a client. This is in the Baltimore area. She had a realtor approach her, actually, about a deal that is in an okay neighborhood. It's a great rental neighborhood, a lot of homeowners, but in Baltimore there's also a lot of board-ups and stuff, and there's some board-ups around this subject property. So she made what she thought was a decent offer. You know, in hindsight, maybe a little high price, but it certainly was within like 60% of the ARV. So that's still a decent deal, with no doubt. All right, so I'm advising her how to go down the path, how to put it under contract, how to negotiate it. She does all that. She puts it under contract in an LLC because there was a non-assignment clause in the contract. All this stuff she does right. She put as her caveat in the contract that she was going to want an inspection period. And so she went through the inspection period. While she was doing that, she, of course, brought some other people in that had expressed an interest in the property at the price she was asking, and none of them would bite. Okay, that tells you that there's a price problem, because in this world, had a paying tenant with a good history, really decent rent, if the buyer is balking, it's because it's price, no other thing. So the client, she goes in, she does the inspection. Again, no hard bite on terms of getting it assigned. And she finds a lot of stuff in the inspection, very legitimately. And based on this stuff, she determines that at the price she was offering, she didn't want the property. Totally legit, totally her prerogative. That's why we have inspection clauses when we can get them in our contracts. So what happens? She says, I'm backing out for these reasons, the added cost of the renovation, yada, yada, yada. And this is a beautiful thing, ladies and gentlemen. This is a beautiful thing. The realtor comes back and says, well, seller would like you to make an offer at a lower price that you think will work for you. How is that? That is just a beautiful thing. The key on this whole scenario is, although my client didn't specifically ask for it, she was asked to come back and bring in a lower offer because she could not make the higher offer commitment due to the condition of the property. Now, no matter which way you look at it, that's called a second round of negotiating. In this case, it was the seller negotiating against themselves, because all my client did was display very strong walkaway power. How's that for a negotiating technique? You got walkaway power. She says, I don't want the deal. And now you've got the seller, in this case, negotiating against themselves, asking my client to come in with an offer that was lower than her original one. And she came in with a really low offer. I don't know what the particular ending to this conversation is. I'll probably know tomorrow, maybe not, maybe Tuesday. But the whole point here, I've been a real stickler on negotiating, and as a dear friend of mine sent me a fortune cookie some time back that says, you don't get what you deserve, you get what you negotiate. And that is the honest truth. And in this case, we have a seller that could be a little more sophisticated, but we certainly have one of my clients who is becoming a negotiating master, and you can too. Hey, I'm being told I'm out of time. I'm going to do this next Sunday. I really look forward to talking to you in the future, and I hope you have a great Memorial Day weekend, and I hope all of our veterans feel very honored. Thank you much. Pete Cardini, out.